It is The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk. Let's continue the Illinois basketball talk. Can't get enough of that around here, especially as you gear up for this upcoming weekend. Big Ten play begins the RAC, 3 p.m. on Saturday. Yes, I'm still calling it the RAC, even though it's Jersey Mike's Arena. Always has to be the RAC.
No one has called it Jersey Mike's Arena. I haven't heard one person call it that.
I guess I was the first.
I guess on like the official broadcast when BTN comes on the air, hey, we're live from Jersey Mike's Arena, because they have to say it. Mm-hmm. That's about the only time everyone calls it the RAC.
And it should be. And they actually turned that into a place that
I know
that had some juice, had a rep. Like the RAC had a reputation of being a really tough place to play.
This Rutgers team is not one that is going to scare you on paper, but you know that going there is still, we're talking about it, like, that's going to be a tough place to win. That's, they've built, that's, it's been incredible that's come that way. I mean, you think 5 years ago right now, you're talking about, oh, Illinois is on the road at Rutgers. Okay. Yeah. I mean, what's the game after that? We don't care about that. But that's it. I mean, it is. And it gets loud in there. The fans are like right on top of the court. It's a great environment. You can feel it on TV. I know you've been there in person for a really cool environment there.
It is very, very loud. And I think I've been there. Have I been there twice? I think I've been there twice. It is a legit. It's not Purdue. You know, like, they haven't had the Purdue teams. Mackey is by far, it separated itself as the best in the league. But it's an upper echelon type of environment. I would even say, now this would be a sneaky hot take, it's been a more imposing arena to, in terms of my gauge on it, than Breslin.
Has it really?
Yeah, I think so.
Can we do this exercise real quick? Can we get like a top five from you? Because you've been to all of them, right?
Yeah, I have. Purdue number one. Indiana's up there. I'll just say who else is in contention. So Indiana's up there. Rutgers is up there. Illinois, am I counting them or no?
Count them, yeah.
Yeah. Illinois, when it's a big game, it's a big-time venue. Let's see. Michigan State deserves to be in the mix. I'm not trying to slight them. Who else is in there? Maryland's pretty good. I'll give Maryland their credit.
I remember that game in December last year. I think that was like a Friday night, too. It was pretty awesome.
I think it was a 9 p.m. local tip-off. So it was 9 p.m. on a Friday night, I think, 9 p.m. on the East Coast. A lot of time to pregame for that one. Scott Van Pelt in the house. They were all amped up because Kevin Willard had them off to a really good start. By the way, what the heck is going on with that team early on this year? That's crazy. Iowa deserves credit. I think especially in the year they had – the year or two they had Luka Garza, but you know, the year that they were towards the top of the Big Ten with him and he was the national player of the year, that place was really, really tough. Wisconsin gets a rep for being a big time, and I'm not, you know, that's a tough place to play, but I don't get the sense that it's like the most raucous environment in the Big Ten. All right.
Feels like it maybe was better in the Bo Ryan era when they had those like Final Four caliber teams. You think about like Frank Kaminsky and that era. It felt like that was more so the, oh, Kohl Center, you're not leaving there with a win. And now it's still probably pretty good, but it's not one of the top five that comes to mind.
Yeah, I'm sure if I would have covered a game there, it would have been a little different. And then when Illinois went and won there during the 2004-05 season, I remember how big of a deal that was. I mean, Bo Ryan, the streak he had going in terms of Cole being one of the best probably in the country at the time is certainly legit. All right, let me give you a list then. I'll say Purdue, Indiana, Illinois, Rutgers, Michigan State. Is that fair? People are going to hate me for Illinois.
Well, but I think, I mean, even from my perspective, and I've been in some awesome Illinois environments, like, it does feel like Indiana is pretty cool. If you catch it big time, like, I'm thinking back to when they beat Purdue there last year, and I was watching that game. It felt like, I mean, the building was about to fall over. It was so loud.
It feels like when Indiana's on a run, I don't know, there's a more, I don't know, the momentum in that building is just probably as as palpable as any that I've been in.
Yep.
Now, I've felt that a lot, probably because all of John Gross's 105 to 76 losses that he went over there and experienced. So there were a lot of things to cheer about in those games in that building. Again, I want to reemphasize, Purdue seems to have the largest student section in the country. Like, behind both baskets, like pretty much all the way to the top, it are just students, which is nuts.
I think Purdue has a very strong argument for not only best environment in the Big Ten, the entire country. That place is insane.
Sorry to steal this off track, but you can call me. Sal has me laughing. He says, you guys need to make a t-shirt with a picture of Lon sitting on a beach that says, deal with it. Yeah, no doubt. Wonder if Lon's listening to us poolside. I think he said he likes... He doesn't get in the water at the beach because he's afraid of sharks and other...
He just sits on the beach. He never gets in.
Other fish and animals that could attack him. Yeah,
he goes back and forth between pool and beach. That's what he says.
He's a beach bar guy.
Yes.
Pool for the water itself. So shout out to Lon if he's listening. But we're carrying on without him this week. But there's my list.
I think you're the biggest upset, I think, from like a general public perspective would be having Michigan State fifth. I think that's usually considered like top three.
It is. Most people would have
a lot of people would have it number two behind Purdue.
Yeah,
but you've been there and you have it five. I don't know.
I just haven't seen the right game there.
But the Illinois has been there a few times with some. Like, I'm trying to remember, they were there a couple years ago when Trent Frazier hit that dagger on them, and that was during February or something. So that had to be a packed house with students and everything.
That was a big game for them. They were still fighting,
but
I believe they're fighting for their tournament lives at that point.
So I guess Illinois hasn't played. You probably haven't been to a game where Illinois has played there, and both teams are top 15 or something like that.
Correct.
So that probably.
And I think
factor.
I think the COVID year probably would have been one where I think Michigan State still wasn't as great as they usually are, but obviously Illinois was a top 10 team in the country.
Yep.
No students in that one. That's when Sissoko just breaks Io's nose and gives him a concussion. So that there was a lot of intensity in that game, but obviously no fans to see it. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's the proper way to say it, because the time before that I was there, it was right before Illinois went on their run in their breakthrough season of 19-20. They got smacked at Michigan State by like 20 points. Cassius tore them up. Illinois looked like they were going off the rails. They had lost to Mizzou. They lost, I think that was the same year they had the Miami loss. And you add that one in there, and they're like, is this going to work for Brad Underwood here at Illinois? But obviously, the rest is history. They won at Wisconsin. They smacked Purdue at home, and they went on a nice streak.
Thoughts on Michigan's arena? I feel like that one, to me, people have said, I know a couple people have been there, it's not all that great, Michigan basketball. Michigan football, if you saw that environment Saturday, maybe the top in all of college football. But basketball,
yeah.
Would you agree?
I would agree, for sure. There was one game, I don't remember which one it was, one of the Hunter Dickinson, I think it might have even been the year Io hits the shot over Xavier Simpson. Like, the students were gone on break or something, so there wasn't a huge student turnout, which is kind of disappointing. But in general, I've been there a handful of times. Just don't get the – Ohio State's the worst. Like, Ohio State's probably the worst. Well, I don't know if they're worse than, like, Penn State or –
Penn State.
The current state of
Penn State has to be the worst.
They're the worst for a good team.
I remember, that's a good way to put it. I remember, though, I want to say it was the year before the COVID year, maybe. So fans were still able to be in the building. And Penn State was like top 10 in the country for whatever reason for a period of time. Illinois goes there. I think Io had like 30 in that game. But it was the ghost town there. Like, you could feel it on TV. There was like 5,000 people in that building, and there was a small student section, and nobody cared. And Penn State was top 10.
You are 100% correct. Yeah, Lamar Stevens and company. I felt bad. There are a lot of teams I feel bad for that season got canceled, the postseason, of course. Illinois, for sure. Dayton that year. That Penn State team was really good. They ended up getting beat by Illinois at home when they were like number 9 or number 8 in the country. Io hits that shot. I know that was the mic'd up game for Underwood and
that's what it was.
Chambers, and he's like, make him go left, make him go left. And then Io goes left and like hits that shot, and they beat him. But they have the infamous curtains in the second level. They put the curtains down so you don't see the seats behind them. And they had those up for that game, or had them down, I should say, for that game. So Penn State's bad. Minnesota, when they're terrible.
Minnesota, when they were like when they're good.
Yeah. The Barn has a good rep. Nebraska deserves some credit because even when they're not that good, number one, that building's the nicest in the Big Ten. It's the newest. It's the nicest. It's kind of like a pro arena, but they still get a decent turnout. But Ohio State has a pro arena vibe. It's huge, but there's no juice in that arena. You can tell it's a football school because they just don't have the desire and the intensity in there. 217 says, now Kyle's going to take this personally.
I take offense to this message.
The Orange Crush is mid to bottom of the Big Ten student section. Half the time, 3/4 of the kids have their arms crossed or on their phones. Kyle, would you like to officially comment?
I never have my arms crossed on my phone. And Diane, who's sitting over here, can attest because I didn't even answer a text at the Marquette game because I wasn't on my phone at all. I was locked in. Maybe not everyone's like me, but no, I mean, calling the Orange Crush mid to bottom tier, that's disrespectful.
I sit right in front of them.
Get out to the arena for next time, like when Purdue comes to town this year, and let's see if you still think that.
I have seen, I think that building delivers when it is a high-level matchup about as well as any place in the country. At least, I should say, not in the country. Any place in the Big Ten that I've been. I think that place, on the whole, will deliver. The Orange Crush, there's years where, you know, you get some ebbs and flows and like, all right, the insults or the insults from this guy this year is a lot better than maybe, all right, he graduates and then there's a new guy and the stuff he's saying is kind of lame. Kyle, no, I'm just kidding. That's a joke. I don't know. We've only seen one big game here so far this year. Yeah, bring on the Big Ten slate. Let Michigan State, Purdue come to town. Let Indiana come to town, even though they're not as good. Let's judge it then. But
now I think that there can be some truth to that message when Eastern Illinois is in the building.
Sure,
But a big game at State Farm Center with the Orange Crush is awesome, and I strongly disagree with that message.
I think so. I think so as well. Let's talk more about the upcoming slate. I want to give some thoughts because FAU played. They lost to Bryant. They played some really good basketball during the feast week. We can talk a little bit more about Rutgers, although I think we've touched enough on them. Let's get initial thoughts on FAU and also Tennessee. Let's dive into this 3-game stretch, what it means for Illinois, and then after that, we'll close out the show with MLB Hot Stove. If you want to weigh in, you can. 217-359-2255 on the U of I Atlanta League text line. No more Orange Crush slander. Otherwise, Kyle's going to go on an all piped up rant. But yeah, you know, if you want to further comment, add credence to Kyle's side or the texter's side, let us know where you stand with the Orange Crush. But we'll answer that and any other text you got within reason. It's The Drive.
You moved into your new home using 2 men and a truck. The garage was clean. Then,
I love the new recliner. What are we going to do with this old one?
Put it in the garage for now.
Over time, this cycle continued.
Put it in the garage for now. Put it in the garage for now. Put it in the garage for now. Put it in the garage for now.
It happens. You got junk. Call 2 men and a truck to get rid of all your junk. Residential or commercial, 2 men and a truck has a solution for your junk removal. Contact them at 2menchampagne.com. 2 men and a truck.
Are you looking for something this holiday season for your customers that can say thank you from you, but at the same time showcase your business and their support? The hunt is over. We offer custom wrapped coolers and lasered mugs, tumblers, water bottles in all shapes, sizes, and colors. Call us at Aftershock, 833-DECAL-IT, or look us up online, AftershockDD.com. That's AftershockDD.com.
Have you ever wondered why you pay your bank to have a checking account with them? We do too. At Fisher National Bank, we offer free checking accounts that reward you to bank with us. Our Rewards Cash Back Checking offers 2.02% cash back on debit card purchases up to $500 monthly. No service fees or balance requirements needed to earn rewards. For a free checking account that pays you back, simply make 12 debit card purchases, receive electronic statements, and have one direct deposit within a monthly cycle. It's so simple. We bet you're doing most of these things already. With Rewards Cash Back Checking, you have access to Reward Saver, which earns 4.07 annual percentage yield on balances up to $20,000. Reward yourself with free Rewards Cash Back Checking and Reward Saver, a few of the many ways Fisher National Bank invests in our customers. See monthly requirements at any branch or fishernational.com. Fisher National Bank. Exceptional communities, exceptional people. Member FDIC.
Crossroads Contractor Supply specializes in the delivery of tools and supplies within a 150-mile radius of Champaign-Urbana. Reliable, timely, and with reasonable prices, Crossroads Contractor Supply knows what equipment and tools are needed for your job. Their slogan, "We have it when you need it." Get the job done right with proper tools and equipment. Did something break? Construction materials as well as safety equipment all available. Call 402-8123. Visit Crossroads Contractor Supply IL.
When it comes to finding a reliable vehicle, look no further than Sarah Champagne, your trusted automotive destination. They carry a lineup of top brands, including Honda, BMW, Subaru, GMC, and Buick. And they're not just about cars. They're about people. Their team is dedicated to providing you with trustworthy service and dependable vehicles that fit your lifestyle. Experience the difference at Sarah Champagne. Visit Sarah, S-E-R-R-A, Champagne.com. Kelsey Furniture in downtown Tuscola sells Tempur-Pedic beds. What's it like?
I'm going to tell you right now, Stevie, that thing is the best thing I've ever slept on in my life. My wife and I both have said we've never had better night's sleep. And the people at Kelsey's were fantastic. Brian is the guy that helped us. You know, as much as I did my research, he has a world of knowledge about beds themselves. Oh, man, it's like sleeping on a cloud, man.
Kelsey Furniture, downtown Tuscola.
Illini fans, mark your calendars for this year's Game Day Spirit Winter Stadium Sale. Shop this iconic sale on Saturday, December 2nd in the Great West Hall of Memorial Stadium from 9 to 1. Take advantage of the best deals and discounts on Illini merchandise around and shop their selection of University of Illinois Athletic Equipment Room merchandise. Follow their event page on Facebook to stay up to date with the latest deals and discounts. Stadium Sale is brought to you by the official fan store, Fighting Illini, Game Day Spirit.
Check off your shopping list with Cardinals Baseball. 5 and 10 game packs are on sale now and feature 2024's highest demand games and promotional giveaways. Choose from the opening day pack, bobblehead pack, Cubs pack, and more. New for 2024, check out the 10 game for the Lou pack, which includes lots of new STL themed promos. Give the gift that lasts all season, all baseball season. Cardinals ticket packs start at just $55 and are on sale now at cardinals.com/holiday.
We've got a split text line, Kyle.
Yes, we do.
Split text line. U of I Atlanta League text line weighing in on the Orange Crush. Not to derail this too long, and we're actually going to call an audible. We'll talk more basketball as we go along. Want to get into this hot stove discussion, especially because it's pertinent and some fresh news as far as that goes. Wanted to divulge enough time, delegate enough time, I should say, the right D word, to getting that done. So Lindy says, sorry, Kyle, but the John Gross crush was better. It's probably got a sting.
I mean, I can't disagree with it because I wasn't a part of the John Gross crush, so I'll let other people chime in on that. But I think this current version, I'm biased, but I think it's also pretty solid.
I think it's pretty good. We'll see. This season, they'll have to earn their stripes. You know, it's a new year. Everybody's got to
– I mean –
it's November. We can't make too many judgments too early, but – Illinois had a pretty pristine home court record of late, although Scott does bring up a valid point. Seems that every non-con ranked team goes into the hall and beats Illinois. How good can the advantage be? This goes back to early Weber. Arizona came in ranked. They beat you a couple years ago. Marquette this year. Illinois beats fair share of ranked teams in the Big Ten. I don't know that it was the Orange Crush's fault that they didn't outscore Arizona a couple of years ago, or that Tyler Kolek had one heck of a game on a bum ankle.
I mean, you talk about Arizona was a one seed that year, and I would bet quite a bit of money that Marquette's going to be a one seed this year, or a two seed, top two seed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I'll fully admit, I placed a wager on Marquette to win the title. I saw them smack Kansas. I don't know the Kansas. I mean, I think there's enough evidence now that they're a little dicey in terms of being definitely the number one team in the country. Do they have time to turn it around? I just wonder about their depth. They were down big. They were down like 20 points to Kentucky, end up coming back and winning that game. They were outclassed by Marquette. I don't know that Kansas at this moment is as good. I think Marquette is that good. They were like 20 to 1 or something like that to win it all. I was like, yeah, yes, please.
Any concerns about backing Shaka Smart that go
deep 100%, in the tournament? 100%. Yeah, no, I had to swallow that. I had to bite that bullet to make that bet, but maybe the talent, the experience of Kolek and Cam Jones. I just love their roster. But yeah, Shaka, if they lose, if they're a one seed, I hope they wouldn't lose in the first round, although that's not as rare these days. I will be unsurprised.
I think I can say, if there was a way to take the Big East versus the field to win the national title this year, I would be all over the Big East, because I think Marquette or UConn has a great chance of doing it, and even Creighton is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Like, those probably the top title contenders in my eyes. Obviously, you got Purdue, but I don't know.
Houston's pretty good. I got to see them against a better team.
You go into the tournament, Kansas, Bill Self, like they're going to be a threat to win it,
Of course,
say.
Yeah.
I think last year, obviously, UConn out of the Big East wins it all. I would be pretty confident in taking some type of wager that the Big East gets the national title winner this year.
All right. I like it. I wonder if that's available, although Kyle won't be able to bet it personally. But yeah. I could slide a few dollars on that, and if it won, maybe I'd just tip you back for the advice. A 309 does say, love the Orange Crush, Kyle. So you do got a supporter out there in the 309. Wanted to make sure we get both sides of the argument in on
this.
Appreciate
that.
Let's transition to baseball. I'm excited about the hot stove, although my team has me with some mixed feelings.
They've been the most active team of anyone so far. I mean,
some of that
on.
Activity is not great in my estimation. We'll see if they got more moves to make regarding the rotation. Make one more big splash in addition to Sonny Gray, who I characterize as one of those. All of a sudden, I'll change my tune. Right now, I'm lukewarm, excited about Sonny Gray, but beyond that, I still question whether this rotation for the Cardinals is good enough. The Cubs, you mentioned it yesterday, not at this point bringing back Marcus Stroman, could use another arm. And MLB Network insider John Paul Morosi reported today that the Cubs and Reds are both quote, inactive trade talks for Shane Beaver of the Cleveland Guardians and Tyler Glasnow of the Tampa Bay Rays. What say you, Kyle, to that news?
Definitely intriguing. I think the Cubs need to add a starter of some kind this offseason, and I know those are probably the two paired with Dylan Cease. Wouldn't that be hilarious if the Cubs traded back for Dylan Cease from the White Sox? But in terms of those two guys, probably the two biggest trade chips when it comes to starting pitchers that are reportedly on the market at this point, and I would hope that the Cubs would be at least involved in that. It sounds like they're getting name dropped of one of two teams means that there's probably something going on there and there's some heavy interest. I would be down for either one of those guys. I think it'd be a great replacement for Marcus Stroman. Both those guys obviously have their injury concerns, which is something that you'd have to account for. But I also think the injury concerns and the fact that both those guys have just 1 year left on their contract, you're not giving up one of your top prospects to bring one of those guys in. I truly don't think that you're going to have to give up a whole lot. You're going to have to obviously have some type of centerpiece in that deal, but it's not going to be Pete Crow, Armstrong, or Morrell or anything like that. So that would intrigue me to go get one of those guys for this next year, kind of as a tryout, see if they can stay healthy and be the guys that they've been in the past. And then you can look into next offseason, seeing about re-signing either of those guys. But in terms of immediate help, I think both those guys are intriguing. If I had to pick one that I would be a little bit more interested in, I think I'd go with Tyler Glass now. I think he's got bigger whiff ability, strikeout stuff. If he's healthy, and now that's the big thing, he's got major injury questions. I don't know if he's pitched more than 120 innings in the last 5 years. But if he can stay healthy and if he can be on the mound, he's nasty. He can strike guys out. He can be a closer to top of your rotation type arm if he's at his best and healthy. So I'd be interested in taking a chance on that.
To that point, as far as his innings, last year he threw a career high 120 innings. Before that, 2022, only seven, 6 2/3 to be exact, 88 in 2021, and a shortened 2020 season, 57, 2019, 60 innings. So injuries have been, to your point, a very, very big concern from him. When he's on the hill, he can be lights out. You want to go over some of his stats? Last year, he wasn't that. I mean, he was 3.53 ERA in 21 starts. Big-time strikeout guy, though. Pretty much throughout his career, he's been about a 12 Ks per nine type of guy. And that really hasn't fluctuated too much whenever he's been on the hill. That's essentially who he is. He's had some electric stretches. You look back to that 2019 season. In 12 starts, he was 6-1 with a 1.78 ERA and striking out 11 per nine. So he's kind of like the injury and the upside. He's kind of like a maybe platinum level. This isn't a perfect comparison. Is he a platinum level Jack Flaherty? Like a guy that's flashed? He's better than Jack Flaherty when he's healthy.
Yeah.
But in terms of like he's supposed to be your ace, but he gets hurt all the time. Yeah, and he's shown more, but that reminds me a little bit of him.
Yeah.
In that sense. Fair. But yeah, he's better than him. That's why I said platinum level.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair, I think. But I just think, and I mentioned it yesterday, the Cubs need to get a starting pitcher and a good one, I think. The focus is obviously on the lineup, and I think rightfully so, and some of the big fish that they're coveting in terms of bats, specifically left-handed bats. But not to be overlooked for the Cubs is they need pitching help. They weren't a great pitching staff overall last year. They got some good performances, like Justin Steele obviously had a breakout season, was awesome. And you got Kyle Hendricks to round back into form a little bit. But as a pitching staff overall, I don't have the exact numbers, but they were below average pitching staff, I think, last year. So they need pitching help, and I think they need, you know, top to mid rotation pitching help. I think either Bieber or Glasnow would fit that, and I think even with the injury concerns would be a risk that I'd be more than willing to take for one season, and I don't think the price will be all that high for either.
On the note of Shane Bieber, 3.80 ERA in 21 starts last year. That was the highest since his rookie season, although only 1 year removed from a 2.88 ERA in 2022 on a full slate of starts. He was the Cy Young winner in 2020. You go back to then, you only had 12 starts in that season, but a 1.63 ERA, 14 Ks per nine. That's crazy. I was looking at some of his metrics, just kind of surface level going to fan graphs. It looks like his slider really fell off last year in terms of the weighted value. Was graded as one of the best sliders in baseball, but last year was pretty much league average, and that played into, he had a career low 7.5 Ks per nine last year. So the strikeout rate really, really dipped last season. His ERA goes up. But in terms of what you would have with both of those guys, Glasnow's owed $25 million next season before becoming a free agent. Shane Bieber has one more year of arbitration. I'm not sure exactly what that number would weigh in at, but then he'd be a free agent after that. So to that point, it's a one-year rental for both those guys, a chance to re-sign them, but on the sense of like compensation, it could help you if both the Rays and the Guardians aren't feeling 100% great about bringing those guys back, which
I don't think they would.
I would say they
those
don't.
Those are organizations that very rarely do.
So, see, from a Cardinals perspective, we have one-year deals for Lynn and Kyle Gibson. If one of those is taking the place of a deal to get, like, one of these guys, I am insanely mad. Like, take a higher upside risk. Yes, especially Glasnow. You've been through some of the, like, when you have an injury. And the Cardinals have had a bunch of injuries with Flaherty, with Matz, with, on down the line, where you want those quote-unquote innings eaters. But I'd rather have a guy with Glasnow who the Cardinals need more swing and miss stuff in their rotation. He's definitely got that. He's been consistent with that when he's on the hill. It's just whether he can stay healthy or not. But I'd rather take maybe the higher risk, higher reward of saying, hey, if we can make our way to a postseason and we start a series with Sonny Gray and Tyler Glasnow, like that is something to actually be fearful of if you're the other side rather than kind of the safer bet. I say safer because just because Lance Lynn's out there every fifth day, just because Kyle Gibson's out there every fifth day, if their ERA is five or higher, you're not winning in that. Like that's not right. A winning formula. So I hope the Cardinals aren't done, and I hope that they go out and are in the mix as well, in addition to the Cubs and Reds. And you said it yesterday, Kyle. You got the sense that the Cardinals probably aren't done, and maybe they're going to be a laying in the weeds type of team for one of these deals. I hope that's the case.
I do think that they're probably done signing free agent pitching. I don't know. You signed Sonny Gray. I don't know if they're going to go $250 million for Yamamoto after that, or I don't, you know, some of the, Nola already re-signed with the Phillies. Like, I don't know if they're going to sign another guy. I do think they are going to trade for a pitcher before this offseason is over. I feel like the things have aligned that way, and they just have so much depth position player-wise that you just got to start trading out of some of that. And with some of these pitchers, especially a Dylan Cease or these two that are reportedly available, like that's got to be a target for the Cardinals. I feel like that's the Cardinals as a trade partner for any of those teams are maybe as perfect a fit as any team in baseball based on how the teams are positioned. I know there were the rumors last year around the trade deadline that maybe the Mariners could trade one of their pitchers and the Cardinals could trade the Mariners one of their outfielders. I think that could still be on the table this offseason. I think that's where I see the Cardinals making another move.
Yeah, if the Mariners want to take Tyler O'Neill back and then one of Tommy Edman and Brendan Donovan, I personally rather keep Brendan Donovan if I'm the Cardinals, but to get Logan Gilbert, that possibly being something that, his name was thrown out a lot, so we'll see where that nothing came of that, so I don't know where that current stands, but we'll see on that front. You mentioned Dylan Cease. MLB.com reported a couple of days ago that the Dodgers and Braves have both been linked to him in trade talks, but also so have quote-unquote many teams that have not been specifically named. I'd imagine there's quite a laundry list there. Cease has one different thing in terms of Bieber and Glasnow. Two more years of team control before entering free agency. Last year, his stats weren't good, 4.58 ERA in 33 starts, but 1 year removed from finishing second in the Cy Young voting in 22 after having a 2.20 ERA in 32 starts. High strikeout guy, just got hit harder last year. Would the White Sox even do a trade with the Cubs for Dylan Cease? Would you want them to consider it? And what do you make of maybe what the asking price would be for a guy has still 2 years of control?
I don't know if the Cubs and Sox are going to link up on another trade. I just don't know what to think about Dylan Cease at this very moment because he just wasn't good last year. But you know he can be one of the best pitchers in baseball, and he was 2 years ago. It's not a pattern of three straight years where he's on the decline. He's young. It feels like last year could have just been in a miserable situation there in Chicago for most of the season. Like, it was just a down year for whatever reason. I still think he's really good, but I do get really concerned when I see the year he had last year and some of the control issues he had. Like, I feel like his asking price, and there's already been some reports out there about how that White Sox are asking price for him is just astronomical. I don't know if I'd personally, as a, and not that I think that they would even really be involved, but I don't know if I want the Cubs to go crazy and give up two top prospects for Dylan Cease when there's some other options, cheaper options out there. And I just don't know what to make of Dylan Cease after last season.
Cardinals fans, would you give up Mason Winn and another piece for Dylan Cease? Because that, you know, Tim Anderson seems like that era there in Chicago is done. Maybe they want a shortstop like a Mason Winn. I don't know. Would they want a pitcher back? The Cardinals don't really have a strength there. Unfortunately, it seems like Matthew Liberatore's status trade value is probably dipped. Would they want like a Tink Hentz in that deal? Nolan Gorman is part of a deal, is definitely within the realm of possibility. So I'd be interested in what you have to say on the U of I Atlanta Link text line, 217-359-2255. Let's finish out with a couple of more pitching names before we take a break. And I got a big question for Kyle as far as the Cubs lineup, if they're not to get Cody Bellinger on the other side. But real quick, all right, so Yoshi Yamamoto has until January 4th to sign an MLB contract. He just won his third straight MVP in Japan. The Dodgers are in on him. The Red Sox, are the Yankees tied to him? I'm sure they are. Yes. Someone who was even doing a conspiracy on Twitter of like they've purposely saved the number 18 and not let anybody wear it so that they would have it there.
If there's a top free agent available or a top trade target available, the Los Angeles Dodgers and the New York Yankees will be involved, and there will be a lot of smoke coming out that they are aggressive. That's just how it goes.
Yep. No, that's a great point. So I shouldn't even have questioned that one. Jordan Montgomery, who I know somebody mentioned on the U of I Atlanta League text line, I was interested in what that would look like if he would have interest in coming back to St. Louis. Two teams that I've seen linked to him recently as far as reporting goes, the New York Mets and the Boston Red Sox. Apparently, he's going to spend the offseason in Boston. He was seen working out at Boston College here recently. I would love to have him back, especially over one of the options of Gibson or Lynn. I'm assuming that, along with you, that it wouldn't be if maybe the Cardinals will be in the hunt in some sense with Yamamoto, but I very much doubt it. I'm guessing they probably out of the mix for Montgomery at this point. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, I mean, I just get very skeptical that a guy signs back to the place that just traded him. It's very, very rarely happened. I also think that there will be some teams aggressively in on Montgomery after the year he went on, especially the two names that you just mentioned are ones that spend quite a bit of money from time to time. I do like the Boston fit for him quite a bit. But at the, you know, money talks, if the Cardinals are the top bidder, I could definitely see it happening. I don't know. I think the Sonny Gray signing, I think that they're going to be active in the trade market, but I feel like Sonny Gray was their big free agent pitching addition. I don't know if they're going to be in on the top free agents going forward here. I do think they'll be in on some other moves.
He says on the U of I Atlanta League text line, one of the Cardinals beat writers suggested Carlson, Mats, and a AAA player for Glasnow. Mats' $11 million salary helps to offset the $25 million for Tyler Glasnow. If the Rays want to take that, I'm all for it.
You'd need a prospect in that deal.
Yeah, there'd have to be probably a pretty good prospect.
I don't think it'd be one of your top prospects, like I said, from the Cubs side. I just, with the injury history and the expiring contract after this season, I don't think it's, you know, the Rays aren't going to get away with asking for a team's top prospect for Tyler Glasnow, but Dylan Carlson and Steven Matz
need something.
If we
can ditch Carlson in that, I'm good.
You got to have something else in there to sweeten the pot for the Rays, I'd have to think.
I'm sure that they would probably try to ask you for Lars Nootbaar instead of Carlson.
Right.
The reporting is that the Cardinals don't want to trade Lars. How much of that is because they love Lars, and how much of that is because they love the fact that Lars is on
Japanese players.
World Baseball Classic team? And I've seen more stuff on
he's
Twitter.
He's a good player, though.
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah, and he's better than Carlson. I mean, as far as what I can tell so far. But, I see it daily on Twitter, probably because I click on Cardinals stuff, and then it gets cycled through my Twitter feed, my X feed, I guess.
Just like the Rack and Jersey Mike's, I'm never calling it X. It's Twitter
forever.
Yeah, it's
Twitter. You're right. It's Twitter, and you know, Lars is talking to Yamamoto, or he's buddying up with Shohei, or whatever is out there. Probably not even real.
During the World Baseball Classic, I rolled my eyes constantly of the Cardinals fans posting the Newt Bar and Ohtani like sitting in the dugout together during the World Baseball Classic. I'm like, give me a break.
It's a good value to have. So we'll see if it plays out into anything, though. We're going to catch a break on the other side. Cody Bellinger, will he be back with the Cubs? Will he be on his way? And if he is, what does that mean for Chicago? I'm going to ask Kyle that next. This is The Drive.
With the leaves and temperatures beginning to fall, it's time to make sure those furnaces are in great running order. Get that furnace tuned up so it doesn't let you down on the cold nights. Dogtown is the people's choice number one HVAC company again in 2023. Ask about the current 0% financing offer on all Lennox high comfort systems and single component units for qualifying applicants. The number's 217-841-4728. Dogtown Heating, Air, and Plumbing, your home's best friend.
You moved into your new home using two men and a truck. The garage was clean. Then,
I love the new recliner. What are we going to do with this old one?
Put it in the garage for now.
Over time, this cycle continued.
Garage for now. Put it in the garage for now. Put it in the garage for now. Put it in the garage for now.
It happens. You got junk. Call two men and a truck to get rid of all your junk. Residential or commercial, two men and a truck has a solution for your junk removal. Contact them at twomenchampagne.com.
Two men and a truck.
Norm Miller here, chairman of Interstate Batteries. You know, without batteries, life would be pretty lifeless. That's why Interstate All Battery Centers carry them in every size, shape, and style, so you can drive, drill, call, film, or do whatever it is you want to do. Stop in today. They've got the power to keep you going. Interstate All Battery Center. Outrageously dependable.
Interstate All Battery Center. You'll find them outrageously dependable just over Interstate 74 at 2504 North Mattis Avenue in Champaign, with batteries for most every application in stock.
Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you can save an average of $889. The Brian Hansen State Farm Agency is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Champaign-Urbana. Call 217-344-1900 today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Average annual household savings based on 2019 national survey by State Farm of new policyholders who reported savings by switching to State Farm.
Don't miss your chance to cheer on Fighting Illini basketball this season.
Deafening in here, 15,000, another shutout.
We need all of Illini Nation to help us defend State Farm Center.
And Illinois overcomes their largest deficit of the season.
Great seat locations are still available for you to see Illinois basketball live this season.
The Illini win it!
Get your tickets today at FightingIllini.com.
Carl works every day to improve the health of community members across the region, and it would not be possible without team members like Sierra Pool, phlebotomy lab lead at Carl Foundation Hospital.
I love working at Carl because of the togetherness among the phlebotomy team and the opportunity to advance within the department.
If you're looking for an opportunity to serve your community like Sierra in a supportive environment with opportunities for growth, visit carl.org/careers.
When it comes to finding a reliable vehicle, look no further than Sarah Champagne, your trusted automotive destination. They carry a lineup of top brands, including Honda, BMW, Subaru, GMC, and Buick. And they're not just about cars. They're about people. Their team is dedicated to providing you with trustworthy service and dependable vehicles that fit your lifestyle. Experience the difference at Sarah Champagne. Visit Sarah, S-E-R-R-A, Champagne.com.
Back in The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Let's continue our MLB hot stove talk as we finish out the remainder of this show. We talked pitching here in the last segment, a number of options available via the trade market, as well as a few, Jordan Montgomery, Yamamoto, still out there on the free agency avenue as well. So let's go to the hitting side of this. The Chicago Cubs got a big one. Cody Bellinger, breakout player last season, pivotal in that team's surge to almost a playoff berth. But I know that that's not something that Kyle's going to take a ton of consolation with. But
Speaking of Cody Bellinger's breakout, as of 3 minutes ago, he was named NL Comeback Player of the Year.
There you go. That had to be an easy vote.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else? Even
had to be
the,
unanimous or close.
There was nobody else that could have even come close, I would imagine.
Not that I can think of.
I say that, but yeah, I mean, he was a all-star level player, had a heck of a season, and we'll be very interested to see if he's out there at Wrigley next year as well, as I'm sure a lot of Cubs fans wondering as well. So what is going to happen, Kyle? You've mentioned pretty much since the end of the season, I think even late last season when we tried to speculate on this, the Yankees would be a big player for Bellinger. They want another outfielder, power bat, especially from the left side. What is your confidence rating right now on the Cubs being able to get him back? And the follow-up to that, which I really want to hit on, is if they don't get him back, what do you think the pivot needs to be for the Cubs? How big of a void does that leave in the lineup if he's not back?
A big one. A very big one. He was the Cubs' best hitter last year. My confidence level is probably like a 3 out of 10 right now. I really think he'll be a New York Yankee next year. That's based. It feels like a lot of the smoke that's out there so far has been the Yankees are going to very much prioritize him. He is as perfect a fit for what the Yankees need this offseason as about anybody other than Ohtani would be. And so I'm very concerned about that. The Cubs have historically not had a whole lot of success with Scott Boras clients. Mm. He is one of them. I'm mentally preparing myself that the Yankees probably overpay a little bit for him. The Cubs don't feel like they want to match that. And he heads and plays in New York and hits 40 homers to the short porch next year. But yeah, if the Cubs don't bring him back, then the urgency is stepped up big time because you need not only to improve your team, but replace the void that he's leaving as your best hitter on your roster last year. And that's very difficult to do. And that's where I get very concerned. If you're not going to bring Shohei Ohtani to Wrigley Field, then where do you go from there in terms of replacing that production? While also, you can't just replace it and call it an offseason. Like, that Cubs lineup was very up and down and has some holes in it that you still need to address alongside that. But the biggest thing would be you need to bring in a star caliber bat and preferably a lefty. And, you know, the free agent market doesn't really have that. So I think the Cubs are going to have to get creative and be involved in trade conversations, whether that's for a guy like Juan Soto, whether that's for a guy that kind of comes out of nowhere and you didn't even know was available. Feels like we've had those every offseason. There's been one guy who all of a sudden, like, even I think about Nolan Arenado with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Like, you had no clue that he was getting traded. All of a sudden, the Cardinals come away with him that offseason out of nowhere. So there's going to probably have to be something like that, but the Cubs are going to have to get creative. They've got some depth in their farm system now. They've built this farm system back up from where it was pre-sell-off in 2021. Now they're pretty widely considered a top five farm in baseball, at least top 10 by everybody that I've seen and read. And so you've got some depth there that you can trade away from. I think they're going to need to do that. And if you can't bring Bellinger back, I think you got to get creative and you got to be very, very aggressive in the trade market and tie yourself to some bigger names in that sense, especially from some maybe rebuilding clubs.
Cody Bellinger last year hit over 300, had, 26 home runs, I believe, as well. Silver Slugger was on the outside of the MVP chase, 10th in the MVP voting, but obviously had a stellar year. 307. 26 home runs, 97 RBIs, 20 stolen bases as well. That's something that you can't discount in that. So a stellar season for a guy that was an MVP back in 2019. Obviously had a well-documented dip after that with the Dodgers, mixed in with some injuries, and he really revitalized his career as a 27-year-old in Chicago. I do want to mention John Paul Morosi of MLB Network within the last couple of days has reported that it would not be surprising if Juan Soto is dealt by the end of the winter meetings, which are early in December. I think you said, Kyle, yesterday that they'll start next week, I believe.
I think so, or maybe even Yeah, I want to say Monday.
Okay. Early December they end, which of course December coming up here by the weekend.
Maybe it's even Friday. I don't know. It's coming up.
But Morosi pointed to the Yankees as the primary team to watch, in his opinion. I wonder who the preference would be. Could the Yankees, I mean, I say could. They probably could do it because they're one of the highest payroll teams in baseball. But their preference between Soto and Bellinger would be interesting. If they have one, I mean, Bellinger coming off the better year. But would they be more interested in trading for Soto or getting Bellinger in free agency? If they were to get Juan Soto, would that help the Cubs bring back Bellinger? Or is it another situation where if, like, the Yankees say, no, actually, Bellinger's our preference, then maybe that opens up the avenue for the Cubs to go get Juan Soto? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think in an ideal offseason and realistically, the Cubs come away with one of those two and the Yankees come away with the other.
Yep.
And I think that there's a chance that that happens. But it would be interesting. I think the debate between the two is kind of interesting. I mean, Juan Soto is the better hitter. There's no question about it. But the situation of you're obviously signing Cody Bellinger long term. Juan Soto is going to be a free agent in a year. And the fact that Cody Bellinger can play a very good defensive center field, left field, right field, and first base. Juan Soto can play a below average defensive right field and DH. So, I mean, it's not quite as easy. I mean, Juan Soto's the better overall baseball player to me because he's such a great hitter. But it's interesting. But I think to me, I think if you're not, again, saying that Shohei Ohtani will not be coming to the Cubs, if you can assume that, I would be very disappointed if the Cubs don't end up with one of those two. I think they need it. They need a star caliber left-handed bat. Obviously, you already had Bellinger, so I would be very interested in re-signing him, and I said all of last year how much I wanted to re-sign him. But if you aren't able to get him, let's say the Yankees overpay for him, give him a big contract, Cubs don't match that, I think you then pivot to a trade. And if Juan Soto's out there, I think the Cubs need to be aggressive and go after that because I think he would do a lot of damage at Wrigley Field.
I was scrolling through as we finish up here the top 25 list of free agents in this cycle on MLB.com. A couple of those already off the board. But one that was on that list a little bit further down, let's see, I think he was in the mid-teens. Jorge Soler. Would you be interested in a reunion in Chicago if you did not were unable to get Bellinger, and let's say the Soto trade just doesn't happen, Soler, would you have interest in bringing him back? And I know we got to finish up here, but Bellinger, I know, played both outfield and first base. Is there a preference on which hole to fill as far as a position goes?
First base, because I think your top prospect's a center fielder, and left field and right field are locked down. So first base for sure, first or third, I think, are the two you want to prioritize. But, yeah, I mean, any guy you can hit, bring him down to Wrigley. I do think Soler would, as kind of a DH-only type, like if you're – I know Christopher Morel has been floated out as a trade piece in like a Juan Soto trade, or even like Pete Alonso was rumored at one point. If you're not trading,